Can I welcome you to this Responsible Tourism panel on child protection? It's the fourth panel already in the Responsible Tourism programme, and we've got two more on this inspiration stage between now and the end of the day at 5 o'clock.
Thank you.
Responsible tourism picked up on the child protection agenda now back in 2011 when a guy called Michael Horton from Cambodia came and took over one of the podiums and talked about how in Cambodia the number of orphanages was increasing and the number of orphans were increasing when the war was long over. And to be honest, it hadn't featured much on the programme here at WTM before that. But that's 2011 now. That's 7 years ago. And I thought it's about time we actually look at how much progress has really been made. So the plan this afternoon is that we've got three speakers with us. We've got a fourth who we hope is going to arrive. He's obviously not been to World Travel Market before, doesn't realise how difficult it is to get in if you haven't printed your badge off. But we're hoping that Krish Kandia will turn up soon. We've got Valerie Sophia, who's replacing Werner, because Werner was unable to join us. We've got Jamie Sweeting here from G Adventures, and we've got Alex Christopoulos. I was hoping to have Tui on the stage. They chose not to be part of this. And we also hope to have Thomas Cook here, and they chose not to be part of this. Which I find disappointing. So, what I'm going to do is ask a very gentle question to each of the speakers to start with, and then I want to work through that agenda. Child labour, begging, orphanages and trafficking, and sexual exploitation. And what I think we'll do is we'll take Q&A as we go through that agenda. So we're not going to leave it all until the end. We'll take the Q&A as it comes up as we work through these different topics. So, Jamie, do you want to tell us what G Adventures is doing about child protection and what you do for a job?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I literally just landed 27 minutes ago, so I only just made it 4.5 hours delayed on Aer Lingus. Thank you very much, Aer Lingus. I wear many different hats at G Adventures, but I think the newest and perhaps most proud one that I wear is I'm the child welfare officer at G Adventures. It's a new position for us. We've been sort of working on the issue of child welfare. I guess we started in 2004 with conversations with ChildSafe. And we really started with asking the question of what does responsible mean when it comes to child welfare and running a travel company. And that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. We worked with ChildSafe to develop a set of guidelines that ChildSafe will talk a little bit about. My role is really to ensure that we take those guidelines, we've turned them into a company policy. We've got a code of conduct, and we're developing and are now rolling out, actually, as of the end of last week, a global training program for all of our staff and tour leaders on how to be responsible when it comes to child welfare in the travel industry.
What does that mean in terms of actual implementation, Jamie? I mean, it's 2004, 2018. That's, what, 14 or 15 years?
What's changed? 2014. So we've been doing it for about 4 years. So what does it mean? First of all, you had to work out what is responsible. So that's what sitting on some of these benches, there's some sets of guidelines there that we set out working with ChildSafe. We decided, do we do these for ourselves or do we do them and then make them publicly available and then be very honest that we haven't actually implemented them yet? So that's what we did. We came out with these earlier this year. And then, to be frank, it then comes a matter of, okay, how do you actually put this into the business? And that means working with literally anybody you can think of in a travel business. It's ranging from your talent or human resources department, your legal department, your marketing department, your sales department, your operations department, your contracting department. Need I go on? Everybody is involved in some way or another. And I guess perhaps the most profound thing I'll say today is, you know, we're sitting here amongst the largest travel trade fair in the world, and most people that are walking around this don't have a clue that they're part of an industry that is harming children. And I don't think any of them that can actually stand up and say, I'm not part of an industry that isn't harming children. And so we need to do something about it, Harold. I mean, I think we're getting there. We're not going to say we're perfect. We're certainly on the right pathway. But I'm not here to talk about G-Adventures. I'm here to try to encourage other travel companies, governments, to get involved in this subject and define what is responsible when it comes to child welfare for their companies, their governments, and their organisations.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll come back to the more specifics in a bit. Let's go to Valerie next. You've been at this a long time as an organisation.
Yes. The ChaiSafe movement... Hi, everyone. Sorry. The ChaiSafe movement has been created by Friends International 10 years ago. Friends International is a social enterprise, working with marginalized children and youth and their families. The movement basically have been created to help everyone to understand and face children risk and provide them with adapted solution around the world. We start advocating for child protection within the tourism industry more than 10 years ago on specific issue, as Alex are going to speak about precisely, I guess, orphanage issues. And we have developed numerous tools available for the industry at different level to help them to improve their activity and build strong line of protection for children. And when we are talking about children, we are not talking about the children in the community you are going to be in interaction with, but we are talking about the children of your staff and the children as a client as well. And going above child protection, it's also a way to protect your business in terms of risk management and reputation as well.
I didn't put the protection of the children with the outbound operators on the list,
yes,
partly because a lot more, I think, has been done on that than there has been on the other aspects, and
yes,
we have limited time. So it is the case that a lot of tour operators have addressed that, and they have now begun to screen the staff who run the crashes and so on, and I'd argue more progress has been made there. But if you just stand back and forget that you're supposed to be friends with the industry, how much change has really happened apart from the production of lots and lots of guidelines
in the field? A lot, actually, but it's never enough, obviously. We know that few of specific issues are becoming mainstream for everyone. People are aware about potential risk, but we need to address the complexity in have it the solution implement in their environment. We basically, with the movement, are working in more than 21 countries around the world, and not only in developed countries. We are running a hotline 7 days a week, 24 hours, managed by social worker. And we can manage and see a huge involvement towards people raising issue about children. That can be a traveler, that can be a small CEO of a travel company in developing countries.
But can you think of actual cases where the lot of children has actually improved because of all this work?
So it's like this, right? When we are talking about children issue, as instance, people are most of the time do not think that having a child begging in the street, it's something harmful for him, and they are going to help. They are going to participate to the vicious circle with providing them with a candy, maybe, or giving them a gift, or giving them $1 because it's nothing for them. And when you see that advocating for this information and have people aware about the issue, they are stopping to do that. And then we are seeing less children being in the tourist area, as instance. But the advocacy and the communication needs to be done constantly everywhere and by everyone.
Are you having more success working with governments or with tour operators?
More and more, basically. government and local authority, as well as international travel company and small businesses.
You ducked my question very nicely, Valerie. My question was, is it more successful to work with destination governments or with tour operators?
Right now, I will say with tour operators, because the discussion has been already undertaken with government. So they are aware, some of them are taking steps to change and improve the tourism guideline. It's an ongoing discussion, but all of them are really doing something better. So it's go at least into the right directions, even if we have the possibility to do always more than that.
Is it going quickly enough?
Sadly not. It goes very, very, very slow.
How many varies was that?
Sorry?
That was very, very, very slow.
Depending if you are talking about, as instance, Jamie mentioned that we started the conversation like years ago. So it took us a while to be able to now launch the guidelines, speak at G Adventure as a Child Safe Certified company. I guess one of the main issue that we realized is that we were missing adapted tools for the businesses to understand the issue. That's why we have developed those guidelines to help everyone to understand that with few steps they can actually have a strong impact on child protection. And now the tools is freely available and accessible to everyone, and we really hope that it can help us to move forward quicker.
We hope so too. Alex.
Okay, nice to meet everyone. I'm Alex Christopoulos. I work for an organization called Lumos. We set up specifically to help reunite children who are currently separated from their families, who spend their life growing up in orphanages and other kinds of institutions, to go back to living with their families or other family-based situations. Globally, there's estimated about 8 million children that are separated from their families who grow up in institutions, commonly known as orphanages, but roughly speaking, consistently in different countries and regions you look at, about 80% of those children have living parents, so they're not orphans in the typical way that we would see. Why this is a child protection issue is that when children are separated from their families and forced to live in institutional care, it harms their development and exposes them to a much higher risk of abuse, harm, and exploitation. So we as an organization set up to support countries, initially in Eastern Europe, to transition away from systems of care that rely on separating children from their families and placing them in institutions, to try to prevent family separation in the first place, and when it's not possible for a child to live with their family, to put in place alternatives such as things like foster care to enable them to live in a family and develop to their full potential, as many of us have been able to do so here. To transition from a model where you separate kids from their families to trying to prevent family separation can be quite complex. And if you look at some countries, I'll take Russia as an example because I can see the advertising billboard in eyeshot. There's about 400,000 children who live in institutions there. So actually reforming that care system is quite complex. So the kind of thing that we do as an organization, and many other organizations such as those on this panel too, is you support with the strategy, the planning, you build the capacity of staff who move from caring in one way, and that way tends to be a one-size-fits-all. I'll take the child out, I'll place him in an institution. Trying to support families and identifying where need is and what you can do about it to try and strengthen a family or strengthen a community. In the countries we've worked in, I can give Bulgaria and Moldova as an example. Over the last 10 years, the number of children in institutions has reduced by about 80-90% over that period. So it's quite an achievable process, though it's got to be done slowly and sensitively with the child's needs in mind. I guess the reason that we're in a travel market, which I must say isn't my normal the normal bed I lie in, is certainly in Europe, when a child separated from their family, at some point or another, the state plays some role in it. Regardless if it does it well or not, the state decides, or is at least aware, where a child ends up. But in a number of other countries, children can be moved into institutions, into orphanages, with very little state involvement, because the orphanages aren't funded by the state. And the kind of situation that would fund these kind of orphanages might be people going and volunteering in the orphanages, people giving money through giving platforms, people going on mission trips to those orphanages. And maybe each little isolated visit itself isn't a huge amount of money, but when you take together hundreds and thousands of people giving gifts to orphanages, that starts to create a really huge financial incentive for orphanages to run. And so in some countries, which we've seen in a number of countries, orphanages are set up purely to act as a vehicle to receive international donations there. And when you set up an orphanage, you need to fill it with orphans. So it starts to act as a draw for bringing children into institutions. And you'll see poverty is one of the biggest drivers for family separation. But actually, in many communities, when families come into some kind of difficulty, the community wraps around and supports that child to stay in the family. And when it's not right for that child to stay in the family, the community looks after. But when you plump in an orphanage, it starts to draw resources and money and acts as an incentive to take the child out of an environment that can protect, nurture and love them, and into a situation where essentially the needs of the organisation tend to take precedent over the needs of a child. And so one of the things that we've been doing over recent years is trying to work with some of the organisations and individuals that, through good intentions, are supporting orphanages to try to help them to transition away to supporting alternatives that keep families together.
That's great.
Thanks very much. Chris, thank you for making it.
Thank you.
We're impressed. I don't know that anybody else would have got a bicycle in here. You've done very well.
Don't tell anyone.
Can you, tell us a little bit about what you do and your perspective on what the challenges are moving forward, as well as where we've come from?
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. Apologies for being late. I wasn't allowed in the building, so it's nice to be here. I don't actually have a ticket, so let's see what happens. So I run a charity called Home for Good, which is a UK-based charity trying to find permanent loving homes for children currently in the care system. You may know that in the UK there's around 80,000 children who are in need right here on our doorsteps. You don't have to travel halfway around the world in order to help vulnerable children. You can help them here in this country. And in the UK and in most developed nations, we gave up on orphanages a long time ago because we realised that families are the best place for children to flourish. If you think about your own circumstances, if you have children and you know you're not able to raise them yourself, how many of us would choose to allow our children to go in an orphanage? Most of us would say there are other families, probably families that you know, that will be able to raise your children and they'll do a better job than an institution. So we believe that we need to start at home. Let's get people who are passionate about caring for vulnerable children active here. Let's get them volunteering to support current foster and adoptive families, being mentors in schools, running extra activities with sports clubs here in the UK before we start going around overseas, which is an incredibly expensive way to help children. Secondly, we believe that there's about to be a plastics revolution when it comes to orphanage care. And that's why I'm excited that you're here. If you know that David Attenborough's incredible Blue Planet 2 documentary changed the way that we saw plastic usage, and that was ahead of government legislation. There was a kind of social change that happened that meant that I'm carrying around now a refillable plastic cup rather than going to Starbucks and picking up their cups. I'm using a water bottle made of glass rather than a plastic one. There are no plastic cups available here. That's a really positive start. And that's ahead of legislative change. So we think it's exciting that the travel industry could be at the lead edge of this change before there's government legislation. Wouldn't it be great if we were the right side of this story? And as Alex has rightly said, a lot of the orphanages that people from the UK over here are visiting, those children do not need to be in orphanages. That 80% statistic comes out of Cambodia. In Sri Lanka, the numbers are more like 90% of children in orphanages don't need to be there. There are families that could take care of them, probably their birth families. We're also interested because a large group of people that are interested in helping out of well-intentioned come from the faith community. I'm a Christian. I've been involved in churches since I was about 15 years old, and I became a follower of Jesus. And helping the poor and the vulnerable is a kind of key component of the Christian faith. So a lot of people that are volunteering to help in these orphanages or hosting orphan choirs over here are doing so out of good intentions as an outworking of their faith. We believe we can change the way that people of faith consider caring for orphans by thinking about some of their own belief systems. If you look in the Bible, for example, there are no orphanages. It was always families that were the best place to care for children. So we believe there's a sea change moment happening, a plastics revolutions moment happening, and it's great that you're here because you can be part of that change. In one sense, as you said, Harold, this has been going on for a long time. And if you think about it, environmental concern has been going on for a long time. But now is a really strategic moment. And if you followed the news recently, you might have seen a three-page article in The Guardian about a month ago showing how much trouble is being caused by voluntourism. There is a government review going on in the Home Affairs Select Committee right now about whether we want to adapt the modern-day slavery bill that was a landmark piece of legislation here in the UK that is now going through the Australian courts. And they, in Australia, have added an orphan trafficking clause. So will we bring that here as well? Also, DFID are interested in this subject as well because it's a child protection issue. So there's an unusual amount of interest right now, and it feels like the tipping point could be at this moment. So it would be lovely if you could be part of that movement, part of that tipping point.
Chris, that's all very well. However, you've just walked into this show. There are thousands of people here today. This is the most poorly attended session so far in the Responsible Tourism Programme. Previous experience would suggest that come the end of this programme, it will still be the most poorly attended, and that the wildlife session tomorrow will be stacked out.
Yeah.
So we've got a long way to go to raise awareness. But that's an easy question for you. The hard question is this. One of the things the industry says to me when we talk to them about the importance of this is that it's very difficult for us to tell our guests, our passengers, that they shouldn't be giving to orphanages and they shouldn't be visiting when the faith groups that they're members of are heavily involved in raising money for orphanages. Is any progress being made there?
Yeah, so there is. And we just had the first ever kind of gathering of kind of church leaders to look at this issue, specifically at Gloucester Cathedral in June. We've got another meeting happening in February. The Archbishop of Canterbury's team are involved in this. We had a big conflab at Lambeth Palace. I think one of the reasons we haven't gone as loudly as we could yet about this issue is what Alex was talking about earlier. If we just turn the money off to orphanages right now, that could mean that children who are currently in orphanages are put in more danger because it's not a phased transition. So we're looking for the right things to be able to tell people. If it's about behaviour change, we don't just want to say stop supporting orphanages. We want to say redirect the money you're using to support orphanages into family-based care models. So at the moment, we're just gathering our kind of tinder, if you like, ready to touch, like the touch paper, as soon as we've got those alternative things that people can give to. And then I think we can make a really big splash.
Okay. What I'd like to do now, if you don't mind, as a panel, is to work through this agenda and just get some quick suggestions on what can be done practically about the first one is child labour, then we'll go on to begging and then orphanages and sexual exploitation at the end if we don't run out of time. But can we talk first about child labour? How do we get the tourism industry to, as much as possible, to get child labour out of their supply chain? What are the way forwards on this? Anybody who wants to contribute?
Well, I think the first way is to start working either in your direct company in terms of your direct employment to make sure you're not doing anything directly that is countervening that. Now, what we've learned in this journey is it's sometimes a little bit more complicated because what you learn is that, you know, there are rules and regulations are different in different parts of the world. And then you have to sort of really look at it of where am I going to draw the line? And there's also situations where if it's a family-owned business, somebody under the age of 12 is allowed to be helping with the washing up in a small family restaurant. But I think often we use those as excuses, right? We're like, oh, it's too complicated, so we'll do nothing. So what we've done is we've put it into our it is from the guidelines, it's gone into our policy. And from our policy, that's gone through our company. We're now vetting that to make sure that we're in line. And then the next stage is your supply chain. Well, we have approximately 1,200 direct contracted suppliers and then another 1,000 subcontracted by them that we call end suppliers. So upward, and they're the ones that actually have a contract where they actually get paid, not cash in hand. So because of the kind of company we are as G Adventures, you know, we're often, you know, going to a local meal with our groups and paying cash in a local restaurant. We're jumping in a tuk-tuk. That requires training of the tour leader to make sure that they're making informed decisions. And then the other way that we're doing it, and we learned some lessons from what we've done with our animal welfare work here, is make sure you get out the word of what you're committing to do to all of your travellers and all of your staff, and get them to hold you accountable and say, look, we're not perfect, we need your help. If you see something that's wrong, tell us, and our commitment is we'll do something to fix it. And we, you know, we have the benefit of, you know, 150,000 travellers a year that can out there be our eyes and ears of what's working and what's not. And when you invite people to tell you what you're doing wrong, they tend to, you know, put your hand up and go,
so
you didn't.
Are you actually getting people calling in and saying these rules are being broken?
So this is just starting for us. We do the public campaign to the consumers is launching on it's the 22nd, which is the UN World Day of the Child. So we're doing a consumer campaign with a video. I can steal the time later, but I think I do want people to understand that the issue is bigger than and broader than child sexual exploitation or orphanages. There's many, many other ways that children are harmed through travel, most of which, I'll put my hand up, are things that I have done thinking I was a traveller, not a tourist, and I was being responsible, that are actually irresponsible, and we can talk a little bit about those later.
Yeah, well, I'm keen to just stick with we've got a big enough agenda. I mean, there clearly are dozens of ways. Does anybody else want to come in on child labour from the panel? Anybody from the audience?
Just following up on Jamie's point, and I think this is relevant to all the different areas, that at some point we have to get into some teeth and accountability, because there's a process to follow, and I think the first one is, and it's the same with child labour, begging, the harm that institutions cause children, looking at your supply chain, the first step is awareness, because lots of people don't know that there's child labour going on. They don't know the harm of orphanages. They don't see begging as begging. So there's this understanding that your action is causing another action, which is harming and potentially exploiting children. So there's that awareness level. And then there's something around guidance and training. But I think if you swing a cat in this room, every organisation here will have a set of guidelines. It'll have a set of training on different areas. So guidelines and support are part of the problem. But then it needs to get into the area of teeth and accountability. And I think particularly, as this subject is about child protection here, having a look at, I mean, you could probably take any organisation, any tourist board here, and ask a critical question. How many child protection reports have we had in the last 1, 2, 3, 10 years? And if the answer's none, then it's not being done properly. If you're an organisation that's interacting with children, or your suppliers are interacting with children, you probably don't have the mechanisms that are picking that up. So there's something around holding yourself to account. And I think Jamie's point of looking at what kind of groups, what kind of constituencies can hold you to account. Customers is a great one. In addition to that, and it's something that we all work in, is building the capacity of governments and other providers to hold people to account. Mm. In some of the countries where we see exploitation highest, it's a low capacity, low resource government there, and you've got hundreds of millions of dollars that are coming into that country in tourism, and it's a really brave government that says, you know, hold on, I'm going to jeopardize this because I want to make sure that you're doing this properly. Mm. And so for organizations like ours, it's trying to build the capacity to enforce the legislation, to train law enforcement, to start taking an active role in that. And that's where it has to get serious, because there's a point where you can have guidelines and you can talk about voluntary guidelines and it feels good and we can get together and congratulate ourselves. But you can do that for years and years and years. And I think at some point as well, it's assessing when action needs to be taken and what the role is of government and others in that.
Valerie, do you have a view on this? When do you think your movement will move on from encouraging people to have guidelines into actually looking at what's being achieved?
We hope. We also need to consider the business side point of view. This is also very important. I would love everything that you just say happening right now. and it's going to take time. The challenge for us is really also to, as an organization working with businesses, to provide them with solution and information that they can really easily understand and have implemented quickly. And this is something a lot of companies around the world working within the tourism industry doesn't know what are the issues. Some of them, yes, of course, but basically they don't realize that they could really uphold child protection and with few steps really change the children condition around them. So it's really together, working together, that we can really have all those situations, child labor, begging, orphanage, and sexual exploitation amongst them avoid. Something that we say before is that we are realizing that people are actually very well intentioned. They want to do good. They are looking to, most of the time, be in touch and in connection with children. And this is also something that should be addressed from the industry, because they could be able to manage the demands. Mm. We will always be facing children products in a way. So how can we all together have your customer informed about the fact that it's not going to be great for the children? And how can we together find alternative products that will not be harmful, but that will be supporting family-based care services, as instance for the orphanage issue?
I mean, it's clear, isn't it, that some of the major retail clothing companies have been caught with child labour in their production line,
yes,
and they've been working on this for years.
Yeah.
So it's harder with child labour, I accept that, which is why I thought we'd come now to begging. Because the thing about begging is that it happens in the street where it can be seen. It's not hidden away. The begging is
everywhere.
There, in public sight, in public view. Mm-hmm. Now, Jamie, what is your company doing about the begging issue with your tour groups? What happens if somebody in one of your tour groups starts giving to child beggars? How's that dealt with?
Basically, our position is you shouldn't give to anything directly to a child, whether it's a money or, you know, in my case, the thing I was guilty of was I was like, I would never give money to a child. Instead, I'll buy them pencils and paper, and I'll donate them stationery, and I'll buy it in WH Smith's and take it with me in my suitcase. Well, no, you shouldn't ever be giving anything directly to a child unless you have either their guardian or parent's permission to do so. And even then, in our guidelines, we recommend that you don't do that, that you actually invest in things that will help the child, which is often investing in the parents and particularly the mothers. So our position is you should not give to anybody that is begging. And in fact, working with Child Safe, we got some really direct examples of things. You should probably tell the story rather than I, of the child with the rose in Cambodia and going with roses and...
Or bracelet or anything, or selling gifts, or selling gifts around the streets, or postcard and anything, or just asking for money and offer food. When most of the time when you ask people, okay, you have a begging child here, he's asking for $1. What do you do? Oh, no, I don't give a dollar. Oh, you have another begging child that is asking for some food. What do you do? Oh, yeah, of course, I'm going to give him some food. But at the end, the issue is the same, is doing that, you keep the child out of the, most of the time, scholar system, and you keep him in the streets.
And there was one particular example in your research that you shared with us that was a child in Cambodia coming up to the restaurants and selling flowers. And so everybody's like, oh, yeah. And they had a sign that says, help me be able to go to school. I can't afford to go to school. So this couple gave to this child. And the next day they saw this child begging in the town square. And then some research was done by ChildSafe to find out that this child was part of a ring run by adults. It was sort of like, you know, to me it was Dickensian. It was like, you know, you're back to Oliver Twist and Fagin, and they're running rackets of kids going out begging on the streets. And we think it's not happening, but it's happening all over the world, and it's happening in places you wouldn't think it was happening as well. So yeah, our position is very clear that you should never give anything directly to a child.
So what happens when one of your clients does start giving away chewing gum or pens or pencils or paper? What do you do?
I think it's an educational process. I'm being very honest here, Harold. We're just beginning to roll this stuff out. It's going to take time. You know, in a lot of the countries that we operate in, we operate in 100 different countries. Their philosophy towards these things is very different than ours might or mine might be. And I'll take the example of riding elephants. We banned elephant riding back in 2014. We nearly had a riot on our hands with our tour leaders in Thailand because they thought that was completely disrespectful of the way they perceive elephants to be in their culture. And I think that's a lot of what we have to do as an international, multinational corporation. We have to set guidelines, we have to set standards, and then we have to do the work, the hard work of bringing all of our different actors, both direct and contracted employees, up to speed to so that they understand if you're going to work for G-Adventures, this is a zero tolerance policy.
That's great.
Alex.
Yeah, I think we have to look at a bit as well about why people give money in these situations, because you don't give money and think there's a child begging. You're confronted with a situation of a child often in extreme poverty who has a sign saying, get me a meal tonight, help me go to school tomorrow. It's a really, all of us have probably been in that kind of situation. It feels horrible if you do, it feels horrible if you don't. And it's the same in many ways of giving to orphanages. You're faced with terrible situations of poverty, situations where you feel children's hope has been taken away. So giving money is one of the very few things that you can do. What other choices do you have? What other alternatives do you have? It's only a dollar for me. I'm going to give it to that child. And I get that instant gratification of doing something that I think will immediately help a child. What we're awful at as a child protection sector is thinking about what that alternative is. What can we offer that gives people a way in which they can support, a way in which they feel good about themselves? A lot of what we tend to say here is kind of, don't do this, don't do that, it might do this, it will cause that. But most people don't make decisions on no's. They want to do things that are fun, they want to do things that are easy, they want to do things that are popular. Look around you, there's no one peddling doom here. It's all about enjoying yourself, going out, having fun. And most people on holiday, most people who travel want that in some way or another. What we don't have, and I think, Harold, it's fair to say we can be honest about ourselves as a child protection sector, is really good alternatives that people can do quite quickly. I can sit down and have a half an hour conversation about why giving to orphanages is bad or what giving that pound to that child is going to cause eventually down the line and talk about that tail of implications. But frankly, most people don't have that. Most people aren't interested in it. And that's why I think these four are really exciting, because people in this room are good at designing products. They're good at designing services in a way that we're not so good at, because that's not our expertise.
Is there anybody in the audience who wants to contribute on this issue of children begging and how you bring it under control from a tour operator perspective? So there you at the back.
Thank you. I think it's really important that everyone in the tourism experience kind of understands the importance of it and the need for it. So I've been, for example, in a working context on an excursion where somebody had come along with a bag of sweets, you know, ready in her bag to give to the children who were around in the village square. And the guide who was with us was clearly very uncomfortable about it, but felt unable really to say anything about it. You could see that he wanted to stop her but didn't feel he was able to, and she would have also been told, for example, in her welcome meeting that morning, that was not what she should be doing, but she'd gone ahead and done it anyway. And there didn't seem to be a sort of coherent message through that was that the guide felt able to, you know, to reinforce. So I think it's really important that everyone is confident in that message as well.
And that they know they'll get the support of the company, because that's part of the problem. I remember in China watching a coach drive away from a site with people throwing sweets out of the windows for the children to run after it. And it wasn't very long ago that was still going on. I'm sure it does still go on. Is there anything else on the child labour agenda? On the begging agenda. Shall we move on then?
I just want to say there's the one thing that we are quite good at G is that we have 68 social enterprises that we've helped set up around the world to actually be able to take our travellers and show them that actually if you invest in communities, particularly in women's run projects, you can empower a whole community. Mm-hmm. And that if you're going to invest your money, invest it in these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Don't give money or sweets or things directly to children. Support things that are going to actually help children and a whole community.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but the problem there is that the instant gratification doesn't exist in that contribution.
Oh, it does, because you get to go and see and explore and do that social enterprise experience on your tour.
Oh, that's good. Not one that you helped fund and set up.
Yeah, we've set them up as tourism business experiences, so they're...
No, I understand that, but if I'm travelling with you and there's a child begging and I give that child some money, which obviously I wouldn't do, I've got instant gratification with that child.
At that moment,
and
yeah.
We can't deliver that the other way, and that's part of the
you
problem.
You can say that tomorrow we're going to this social enterprise restaurant that you're going to get to meet the community who you've raised up.
I accept that, Jimmy. But I don't think it's the same experience. And that's it's part of the problem. It's that instant gratification that comes from giving to a child, which is the difficult thing to overcome. Even when people have seen Slumdog Millionaire, even though people know that that happens, it doesn't affect their behaviour. Chris?
There is a bit of instant payoff when you've been educated and you know why you're not doing it. So... you can feel smugly happy that you've done something or you haven't done something bad. We've experienced something interesting in that we found a lot of interest in millennials in ethical living. So a lot of millennials that we know are coming forward to foster children in the UK. And we thought that wouldn't happen. We thought it would happen for an older generation. So if your travel industry sector is particularly interested in the younger end of the market, if you could be a differentiator by showing that here are the rules of how we operate. When you travel with us, your impact is only for good within this area. I think that's a really exciting offering. If you can say we are the most ethical, we've got the highest standards, I think people might be even willing to pay a little bit extra, like they were for fair trade bananas when they first started. Do you remember that I felt ethically superior because I was buying a more expensive banana because I was doing more good for the world. So maybe that's another differentiator. The other side of it is we saw what happened with Oxfam when they weren't altogether sorted out on how women were being treated within their organisation. So there's a carrot and a stick, isn't it? The carrot is you could be the market differentiator by being the most ethical in this area, or the stick is when this sea change happens, if you're behind the curve, you will see financial deficit as a result of this. So there are market incentives to get ahead of this.
Is there anybody who wants to contribute further on either begging or child labour?
Hi. I was just going to say, I don't think giving to children who are begging gives you a sense of instant gratification. It alleviates guilt.
Yeah.
And if you're given a different way to alleviate that guilt,
yes,
such as by going to see some of the G Adventures projects,
that's good,
then you can step away from that. I don't think gratification is quite the right word.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Do you remember the comic relief with Ed Sheeran? I think he felt very guilty in that moment that a kid was getting beaten up for talking to him. So he wanted to alleviate his guilt. But there was a massive backlash about that in the press afterwards, and it changed the way that comic relief related to vulnerable children in that moment. So I think you're right. I think if you can give people pre-warning of what's happening and alternatives, I think that could be very, very exciting.
So just, my name's Claire. I'm from APTA, the Travel Association. Just thinking about your point, Alex, around what is the product, you know, what is the alternative? I do think that we have to be open to the prospect that the alternative may not involve children, kind of exactly as you're saying, Jamie. So the solutions probably aren't going to come from your sector, and it's much more about the broader tourism experience. And, you know, referring back to the creating shared value session that we had this morning, how is tourism having a positive impact by what it's doing?
So anyone else that wants to come in before we move on? Well, let's move on to orphanages then, which we've talked about a lot at WTM over the years. It's probably the thing we've talked about more in the child protection agenda. And I just wanted to draw your attention to this. This was a landmark moment for me when TUI decided that child trafficking to orphanages should be put alongside their modern slavery statement. I was delighted to see that. I hope maybe, Jane, next year somebody from TUI will come along and talk about this kind of thing. But it has been a really landmark change that a major tour operator has made. But can we come back to you, Alex, particularly on this issue of orphanage tourism and where we're going on this? Are we making any progress at all?
Yeah,
apart from TUI?
I think in the last 24 months, last couple of years, has been tremendous progress around tourism and to orphanages, and just generally how giving to orphanages is seen. You've had movement at, as Chris said, at a government level. The Australian government has taken this seriously and put in place draft legislation around the trafficking of children into orphanages. You've got the UK government starting to address this in their terms of reference to the Modern Slavery Act. And then I think the point Chris made is really important here. Voluntarily, about four of the world's biggest volunteering companies are starting to transition away from sending volunteers to orphanages to alternatives. What's really great in terms of the feedback that's been had initially from those businesses is that it hasn't affected their business. There's not suddenly hundreds of volunteers aren't stopping using their services. They're quite happy to do different kinds of volunteering experiences. So it hasn't had that financial implication, which I think we all feared might happen to make it an unattractive area. And then you've also had some of the world's biggest frameworks have taken this seriously. The US Trafficking in Persons Department recognized, had a special section on the link between institutionalization of children and trafficking, which just starts to change that kind of global fabric. And so you've got that global level, you've got governments doing it, you've got businesses, and now a lot more charities are starting to take it seriously. I think where the next big frontier lies is public. At the moment, as an industry, it's quite easy for us to make standards, guidelines, and so forth. But a lot of all of the different areas we've talked about today are quite easy for me to do as an individual without touching any official business. With four clicks of a mouse, I can give money to an orphanage. With five, I can probably arrange to go and visit them. So how do we start to get on the public engagement side? How do we start to educate people in a mass way at the moment? Because we're really good at that business-to-business side of convincing stakeholders to change their policies and practice. But perhaps moving more on to kind of a consumer level is perhaps the next step that we need to take.
Jamie, where has G Adventures got to on this specific issue?
Well, we haven't visited orphanages for a very long time. And I think what we learned through the journey with ChildSafe is that the issue is much broader than orphanages. The orphanages thing is a very specific piece of the problem. But the problem is when travel companies use children as a tourist attraction. Mm. That's the fundamental problem. And that's why I love the in brackets part, which was not visiting school classrooms. Because there are way more travel companies that go and visit schools than go to orphanages. And then you go one step further and you go, okay, you're wondering why this was a relatively poorly attended session. How many people around here, if you wander through and pick up their brochures, are using kids to sell their destination and sell their company? That's just wrong, right? Did they get the permission of their parents to do that? Were they remunerated for that? I almost guarantee none of them did that. So to us, it's a lot bigger issue than just orphanages. Again, it would have been much easier for us to say nobody that goes on a G Adventures trip sexually exploits children, and nobody goes to visit an orphanage. Oh, we're done with child welfare. We don't need to do anything. No, when we did that, we checked those two boxes and then said, shit, we need to write some guidelines because there aren't any for the industry.
Wow.
You know, you made the point earlier that, oh, it's all very well that we've got guidelines. We didn't have guidelines until this year as an industry. And we didn't want to have to go and write them. We didn't want to have to make a lot of work for these guys, but it didn't exist.
Process, yeah. Claire, when were the APTA guidelines published? Is Claire still here?
She is.
Sorry, can we get a microphone to Claire, please?
The APTA guidelines, much as I love Claire and much as I love her work, don't address most of the issues that are in our guidelines.
So obviously I fed into the G Adventures guidelines. Yeah, we did
review our Every Child Everywhere training a year or so ago, and they needed updating a number of different reasons. I think we needed to, so our guidance for the travel industry has always covered children as customers and children in destinations with the same approach. There's a range of different issues, but fundamentally a child is a child. But what we really wanted to do with the update was take learning from the human rights, the business and human rights guiding principles, and shift to a kind of more child safeguarding approach. What I would say, though, I mean, there's a reason why I fed into the G-Adventures guidelines. What you've done is you've really tailored it and you've made it real for businesses like yourselves. And you've, I mean, because ABTA, we wrote the guidance for our members and we have 1,200 members of so many different business models, and we needed to make it relevant for all of them. And what you've really done is you've really brought to life a lot of really relevant issues and gone into more detail than we would have been able to have done.
Yeah. Valerie, how many sets of guidelines are you aware of?
Sorry?
How many sets of guidelines are you aware of?
Well, everything is based on 7 standards. And if I can just complete Claire's answer, is that the guideline has been developed through a collective effort with more than 35 different stakeholders from the industry at different level, working with guest house, so to backpacker hostel, to headquarter of a multinational company within the tourism industry, and child protection specialists, obviously. And there are not set in the ground. They have been designed to evolve with the industry needs and expertise. Child issues are going to evolve as well. We spoke about it start from the orphanages. Now we are getting into schools. Looking forward, we are already working on a specific issue of children amongst community-based products and experiences that are now available for your customer. So the guidelines are evolving, and we really need to have your industry to expertise to have it efficient.
Alex, you...
Yeah, I think the point Claire make is really good here, and believe me, I'm not knocking guidelines. It's part of a process, but it's like standards, really. Until you then start to inspect the standards, they don't really mean anything. So it's that process it follows. So it's certainly the right time. And I think the point Claire makes, which is really important, is supporting orphanages or any of these areas is really different dependent on the different kind of business. If I'm a business that's supported an orphanage for 30 years and I want to take that support away, that's a long-term divestment process to make sure you can wean it off that money responsibly. If I'm someone that maybe sends one volunteer a year, that transition is completely different. So I think it's really important to have those kind of general standards, guidelines, principles, and then, you know, specific companies think, what does my footprint look like, and how can I, you know, what steps can I take? So that's why I think it's really important. So loads is happening in the last 24 months. I mean, so many different constituencies that play a role in supporting orphanages overseas are starting to take action. It's a wonderful time, and I think in some ways the challenge that Krish laid out about how do we do it responsibly and make sure you don't have some mass divestment that happens straight away and it becomes so unpopular and toxic that money just stops flowing to supporting children overseas. That's a huge risk there, and that, you know, in some ways that we have to be responsible for making sure that's managed.
Valerie, we're coming very much to the end of the time that we have for this session, but I don't want to leave it without asking you in particular, because of the work that Friends International has done, particularly on the sexual exploitation of children, just to kind of sum up in a few minutes where we've got to on that agenda item. And we saw an amazing initiative from TUI in the Netherlands, which we awarded a Responsible Tourism Award for 2 or 3 years ago. Some good things have been done, but if you look at it overall, how much progress have we really made in that area?
You know, regarding the orphanage and trafficking.
No, there's trafficking and sexual exploitation rather than orphanages there.
So we are working closely with UNICEF, an international organization, as well as other associations. ECPAT, LECOD are doing an amazing job in advocating for this issue. What we are missing is top-down, bottom-up approach. And we are seeing that now we have more and more advertising and awareness campaigns to the customer internationally to help them understand that they can report the issue and they can act. And this is something that has been achieved during the last few years. Government involvement, international businesses with a response system in place in the field that can be always increased.
But it seems to me this is an issue where implementation and enforcement becomes even more important.
Always. It is.
We know, for example, that the British government trained all its consular staff in dealing with these cases. And I go into the British High Commission or the embassy and say, how many cases have actually come to you? It's incredibly rare.
Yeah.
Because somebody carries $100 in their pocket and they walk scot-free.
Yeah.
So what would you say in the closing minutes of this are the approaches which are most likely to be successful in avoiding the sexual exploitation of children?
That everyone needs to be aware about the risk and the solution, as well as your talking about your customer, your staff, your frontline staff, the guide tour that are managing the visits on the site. And the message doesn't need to only be an awareness information, but it needs to provide with a proper solution for people to take actions.
So you seem to be saying that we need more initiatives of the sort that we saw from TUI in the Netherlands 2 or 3 years ago. It's more engagement of the travelling public in calling these things in.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Not, as the poster has it there, not turning a blind eye. James, rather.
So there are some good stories here, actually.
Well,
not only from the top down, but from the bottom up. I'll give you one example. There's a non-profit organisation based in Kathmandu called Sesani, and they set themselves up originally as an organisation that trained survivors of trafficking as paralegals to be based in the different police stations around Kathmandu so that they could grab essentially the women as they came into the police stations and be able to provide them support and help from a legal perspective, and then all of the other support that they were able to provide as well. We worked with them to develop a program. They call it Sisterhood of Survivors, and it's a tourism social enterprise where survivors that don't have the education to become paralegals learn to be able to do a momo making food tourism experience with G-Adventures Travelers. And working with them, they have now gone and they're going up to the villages in remote areas to develop homestay programs to use tourism as a vehicle for to bring wealth into those communities so that they don't have to sell their children into slavery and into trafficking. And it's one very small example, but it is an example where tourism actually can make a difference and start to stop the supply side of this, not just the demand side.
Does anyone on the panel want to make a final comment?
I would be, I'm actually encouraged how many of you did come. I thought there'd be less of you, so maybe it's a glass half full for me. I'd love to know what you think campaigning organisations like us can do to help change things at your end. Is it about awards for innovation in this kind of space? Is that a positive that we could bring? Or is it about a scorecard where which organisations are failing? You know, what can we do to help you make the changes that you probably need to? What can we do from outside to incentivize you? I'd be really interested in that. So if you want to talk to me afterwards, I'd be happy to hear any ideas that you had.
Okay, thank you very much for that. It is worth reflecting on the fact that we started this session with about 25 people, and I reckon we've now got more than 50. So at last, we've seen the audience actually grow during one of these sessions, which is something I will take away to cheer me up. But there's still a hell of a long way to go on this issue. We're making progress too slowly. And we saw in the UK the backlash when the British government decided to delay doing something about fixed odds betting on the gambling machines. Mm. Absolute outrage. Mm. And it seems to me that if we don't begin to see more progress on this from the travel industry, maybe we need to try and get more public awareness of how little is or is not being done. And it will vary from one source market and one destination to another. But I don't think we'll get a global solution. We never do. Mm. We need to get particular solutions for particular outsourced markets and particular destinations. But if you could thank the panel in the usual way, I'd be grateful.
I'd just like to thank Harold for putting it on the agenda.
Yeah, well
done. Yes.
That just tells me I haven't been hard enough on you, Jamie. We will come back to this issue. We've done it every year since 2011. We'll not drop it.
That's great.
There's very few issues that we take up every single year, but this one is so important that we will.